on, everyone, and welcome back to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Cavanaugh.
And I'm Young Will.
Yes, you are, Young William. We have a good show for you this week. Hope you enjoy our discussions about one of the greats in our sport, the loss of the amazing Barbara Alderman. Also, talk about buying dogs internationally and a book review from our very own Young William. All that and more on the Dog Show Drive.
I'm born to run down rocky cliffs. Give me grace, bury my sins. Shattered glass and black holes can't hold me back from where I need to go. Oh, 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 oh. Yellow hills.
Well, good morning, Young William. Here we are once again. The Dog Show Drive. How you doing up there, bud?
I'm good. I love hearing Young William every time.
Makes you feel younger, doesn't it? Well, he was a great conqueror or something, I think. I don't know. That was another guy, William the Conqueror. Yeah, maybe there's Young William the Conqueror too. I don't know. But it's not, there's a person named Young William.
There was William the Conqueror. There also was Alexander the Great, you know.
Well, wow, you got it going on there, bud.
Exactly. When Alexander looked across the breadth of his domain, he wept.
That's right.
Worlds to conquer.
Yeah. I thought I was the English major. Well done. Anyway, lots to talk about today. And to start off with a sad one, but it's as sad as it is, the memories. We've lost one of the all-time greats in our sport, Barbara Alderman. And Barbara was... she was so loved. I don't know.
Just so much fun all the time. You knew she was going to do a good job every time she judged.
Yep.
You got to figure out what she liked, so you knew what to show to her. But she was just, it just brightened your day when she was on the panel. It just... Yeah. She's supposed to be judging at our show in Toronto in the fall, the one you're coming to. Yeah. And we're devastated that she was, you know, everybody was looking forward to seeing Barbie back in Canada. So,
You know, people here have been getting calls to cover her assignments, and two of them have called me and said, we're thrilled to do it, but it's so sad. We don't even know if we want to. It's you'd rather just have the ring dark in her honor. I mean, I don't know if there's another personality that we've had. She was she looked so prim and proper, yet she was the funniest person you ever want to meet in your life, you know? And she had no problem using flowery language as well, you know, despite her appearance.
Well, I remember one time I think it was at one of your shows in Kalamazoo. I was there showing something, and Kirsten McGregor and Courtney Niola were with me, and they wanted to go to the mall, right? So we went to the mall. Well, they went into Victoria's Secret, and I perused Victoria's Secret. Then I went back out in the aisleway and sat on the bench and waited for the girls to, well, who comes into Victoria's Secret? Barbara Alderman.
No.
Yes. And then she stops and she says she's laughing because I'm sitting there waiting for the girls. And you know what? Every time I saw her last few years, she'd say, remember when I walked into Victoria's Secret and saw you sitting there? She always brought it up.
Oh, what a great story. That defines Barbara, doesn't it?
I mean, oh, my God. It was good. And I remember going somewhere and she was in jeans wandering around. Mm-hmm. Like another mall or something. And I'd never seen Barbara in jeans in my life. It was shocking. And she said, what do you think I do the kennel work in?
True. And she does. That's what she
does. I know she does.
And she was a landlord too. You know, she used to go collect rent and do all those good things. She had just so, and this was right up to the end. She was so active with her kennel and the dogs and the rentals and everything else. She was such an independent and wonderful soul. And the stories go on forever. First of all, she was an early riser. So when we were on the same panel together, we'd be the only two in the breakfast thing first. You know, and I wasn't necessarily all that eager to get up and go. I just can't sleep at dog shows in the morning. So it'd end up 6:30, 7 o'clock, Barbara and I would be the only ones in the breakfast room. And she'd let go of the stories, and boy, I'm telling you,
Oh, I know.
They were so, and George stories too.
Oh, I used to love when they both came to shows in Canada. It was
Man, what a riot he was. Oh. And her telling George stories was just, you know, that was classic in itself. But we were on the panel together at Woofstock last year. And boy, did we have a good time. You have to have a good time when you're around Barbara. But, you know, last year, well, it was a year ago because Canfield has just wrapped up, I think. We were together in Canfield, and I did, what is it called now? Apprentice judging or whatever the hell it's called. An Irish Wolfhounds with her. And of course, she showed Irish Wolfhounds. And it was wonderful. We had a good size entry, and they were all related to my old dog, which was fun because I hadn't seen them. Two were litter brothers, and one was a son of a litter brother. And there was so much to discuss after. And we had a wonderful time. And she's going over these dogs, and she's telling me, she'd step back, talk about the dog, and she'd tell me an Irish Wolfhound story about one she showed or something. And yeah. And she was so happy there was good quality. And we had the best time. I just miss her so much. But you can't help but smile when you say her name.
Oh, I know. And when I have a story about when her and George came up judging Canada. At that time, we had two really good herding dogs. We had a sheepdog and a beardy dog. And George gave the beardy dog the group, and Barbie ended up giving the beardy dog best show. The next day, Barbie gave the sheepdog the group, and George ended up giving the sheepdog best show.
Great.
But it was just... Just the way they used to play off each other was so endearing. It really was.
Comedy team. They were a comedy team. Yeah. But the funny, you know, the thing about her is, I mean, she always looked so good. You know, she was always so pretty. And that red jacket, of course, that red suit that defined her. And then she shows up at Woofstock with Kim Meredith, who was a dear friend. Well, she had so many dear friends. Kim had bought her somewhere a really cool hippie outfit. And gave it to her the last time she had judged at Woofstock. And of course, she remembered it and wore it again this time. And she just, the pictures are phenomenal. Yeah. And I wrote about it in the Chronicle, a whole thing on Woofstock. The history of how it really went, and which is a fascinating history. You'll have to get the magazine and read it if you want to know. But nothing like you'd expect. Anyway, she was in the pictures, of course. And she called right away as soon as it hit the press, and she said how much she enjoyed reading it and what an interesting perspective on the history, and then went on to tell me more stories. And it was one of my favorite phone calls out of the blue that day. I didn't expect it from that article. And whenever you got a call from her, it took a while too. But why wouldn't you want to talk to Barbara? I mean,
oh, exactly. And I've been speaking to her a few times recently because I was trying to pin her down for an interview, and she was, oh yes, William, we can do that, oh yes, we can do that. She kept saying yes, yeah, but yeah. She was always so busy, I could never pin her down for it.
She was busy. Oh, she had so much going on.
She sure
how did. She did it. And judging every weekend and making the arrangements, and I don't know how she did it. I get worn out thinking about it, and I'm, you know, I don't think anyone knows how old Barbara was or cares. It was just Barbara. And, right. You know, she was just so, so darn sensational, but the Energizer Bunny and sharp as a tack, you know, always with it. Just, I don't know, what a great loss. And I feel sorry for her many friends. She had so many close friends. I know Dana and many others were just so close with her, and it just, and that's the sad part is how many people will miss her so dearly. But when I think of her herself, goodness.
Yeah, it was a shock to us all when the message came through. Was I couldn't believe it. Yeah. She just never ever seemed to let up, you know.
No, so vibrant. Yeah. So vibrant. And what do we, you know, I guess that's the way you hope for it, right? That you're that active and that sharp,
yeah,
right to the end. Because I don't know. As my doctor said, none of us get out of here alive.
That's right.
So you want to live like Barbara did and be positive, upbeat, and tell those stories. And, you know, the wonderful imbalance of her tidiness and beauty and so neat, using sailor's language on occasion, that was just that balance was just sensational. It was all Barbara. You didn't expect it to come out of her mouth, you know. Oh gosh, what a storyteller she was. And yeah, wonderful. Anyway, Yeah, I'd say that's sad news because it sure is, but I can't stop smiling talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. It's so sad, but you think about Barbara and you start to smile.
Yeah. So, Barbara, God bless you. And thanks so much for making us all smile all these years. You know, just one of the best. One of the best. Humans, as well as dog people. So, there you have it. What else is new, Will? We were talking earlier before we started about international stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a dog in a country in Central Europe that I'm interested in. And it gets you thinking about purchasing dogs abroad. And I've done it before. I bought pointers over from Ireland and England, of course. And what's that all about? And the difficulties in knowing what you're getting all that it brings as far as infusion into your pedigrees. It's so much to think about. And I'm really torn about this particular dog. And the reason is a line I used to use on people. At Crufts, every year, the pointer ring would be 10 deep. And it was pretty easy. If I would just go over and take a picture or two of a particular dog in line, and then everybody wanted to buy it. So I would try to steer to the second or third one that I didn't want to buy, take 100 pictures. Then all the people, I don't want to mention their names, that weren't necessarily enthusiasts, but had a lot of money, would go over there to buy. They would go buy that one, and I'd get the good one by not taking a picture of it at all. But when people asked me, I should really buy this dog. What do you think? You know, if they were good friends and serious pointer devotees from America, I would say, think of this. Picture this dog that you're all excited about here in Birmingham, England, at Crufts. Picture this dog at a show in Dayton, Ohio. Would you be jumping over the ring to buy it? Are you just caught up in the whole Anglophile, I'm away, I'm traveling, this breed is linked to this country and this wonderful architecture and art? Are you just taken up by that? Is your brain telling you you're out of context? This is better than you think. Can you, in your mind, take that dog, put it in Dayton in the ring, and feel the same way about it? I can't. I can tell people that's what they should do, but it's hard for me to do.
Yeah, almost. I understand exactly what you're trying to say now. That's a good concept to train yourself on dogs. That's a good idea because you think about that. Because even when we were in Ireland, certain dogs stuck out, you know, we're like, oh, look at this dog. But in retrospect, if we had taken it home and put it in Dayton, Ohio, would it have stuck out? You know, and so right. were we that excited about it for the right reasons?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you're in Ireland, there's Irish setters, it's beautiful. And in that particular case, there were some Irish setters we could have brought back to fix things.
But I remember, I don't know if you remember this, we were there. Mark Threlfall was with us, and you and Cher were there, and Monica and I were there, and we were in separate spots in the dog show, and we all converged on this one dog. Right? Remember, it was a Newfoundland, and from up in the stands, it looked out of this world. When we got there, it was, because it was only 18 inches tall. Right. But it sure looked, we're looking down, oh my God, look at that dog. For some reason, all three of us,
Now the Springers that guy brought, they were maybe the best I've ever seen. They were spectacular.
And I go over that one dog.
Yeah. Man, I would take that guy's dogs and put them anywhere in the world, plop them in the ring, and they'd steal my heart. And we did see some nice Irish setters.
No, no question.
It's a tough thing to do. And then you've got to think, what's it like to ship one over? You know, it's not cheap. And sometimes, you know, people want a lot of money if they're going to send a dog over, and that's, you know, that's all. And I bought a dog over who was sensational and a great big winner right out of the box, but he ended up being sterile after one breeding. And I found out later that was in that line. Well, I didn't know that. No one told me. What don't you know about what's back there? What are you seeing in the pictures? By the way, nowadays with international, purchases, and if someone sends you pictures, do you believe them?
Oh, exactly.
You know, Photoshop.
You can make a portrait out of anything, and like, oh, look at that
I just sent
peanut butter. That's the best jar of peanut butter I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I just sent you a picture of Archie, our son's dog, who in that picture might be the best pointer you've ever seen in your life. I mean, he's spectacular, right?
Oh, he's beautiful. I couldn't stop looking at him.
He happened to see something, stop, and he is beautiful. But he stopped and looked, and that moment, that picture, which is untouched, looks just out of this world. But I could take another picture of him, and he wouldn't look so good. You know, you've got to get that picture. But these days, people change and make them look good, and it's not hard to do. You know,
I remember when I worked for Gary McDonald, we had a client that we showed a lot of dogs for. And he always imported dogs from England in his breed. I'll say his breed was beagles.
Yeah.
And every time Gary would go to the kennel, he'd get madder and madder because there'd be this beagle that wouldn't fit on the table because it was so long. And he's like, next time you go there, I'm going with you. You're not letting these people sell you these dogs because they're hyping you up. And you think, oh, yeah, look at this dog. Because he's a great man, and he was – but he was very, not naive, but he was easily sold sometimes.
Yeah.
He'd come back with some dogs, and Gary would get so mad at him.
You know? Yeah, you get caught up in the context.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you have to, and this particular dog is a color that's not common here and markings that aren't common here. So I know it wouldn't be a big winner. That's not the point of bringing her over. But anyway,
the pictures look beautiful. I can't wait to see her. So,
well, I think, and I saw videos of her, and that really is the better test, right? Because you can't Photoshop those.
Right.
Well, unless you're working them.
You have a Marvel director doing your videos.
Yeah. But you know, the pictures of Brody and his wife Margaret were here visiting with his two pointers. And we took 100 pictures. I swear we took probably 50, but we took a lot of pictures. And he was so funny. I'd say, Brody, can I at least take the collar off? No, you cannot Photoshop these. No. He wouldn't let me touch a thing. He let me touch up the old dog. You know, I could take the collar off. But as far as his young dog, no, it had to be 100% per. So it took us 50 pictures because the bitch may be looking good, but he or I may look stupid, or there may be a tree branch coming out of her head, or, you know, you just have to get it right. And fortunately, we got some real nice, two nice pictures.
Well, you send me those pictures too. She looks stunning.
I'm not allowed to discuss such matters, but
no, okay.
He has a very nice bitch. Anyway, the pictures, international things, all this is a new level of dogs. You know, it used to be, well, I can tell you how I got Miles. When I was working for Forsythe's, they had a pointer named Crook Rise. And Miles, by the way, is a famous pointer sire. I didn't breed him. I owned them and showed him. So I can't take credit except for finding him and buying him. But he won the National in 1980, first time out of the box at the National anyway. Anyway, I knew the Crook Rise reputation. Bob Forsythe, who I worked for, had bought a dog over for himself and a couple for a client. I worked there. I knew the dogs inside out. I knew their pluses and minuses and temperaments. And I knew that this woman's been doing it forever and she's 100% trustworthy. I have the telegram she sent me of when he was going to arrive at the airport. Telegram. not emails, not Facebook messengers. It was a process of trust. There weren't, I think there was one black and white Polaroid or something, you know. I told her what I wanted, and I told her I had time to wait. And she knew who I was, and she knew I worked for the Forsythe's, and she certainly knew who they were. And I waited and got my puppy in trust. There was no Photoshop going back and forth. There was no pedigrees except handwritten ones. There were no health clearances or records. It was a real shot in the dark. And if you brought one over and got lucky, you got lucky. But a lot of people didn't. I'm not sure it's changed. You bring them over and you're lucky or not, just because we have the technology to think you're doing your research. I'm not sure it helps a bit. It's interesting. And there are differences, of course, in the breeds. This particular dog, as I said, I don't picture her doing any kind of winning. But for the gene pool, I think it'd be a real nice addition.
It'd be important. It's so funny. We talked about this earlier as well. how I was telling you a story. Well, we're talking about Archie.
Well, yeah.
The reason Archie wasn't shown was because he's monarchid.
Yes. This is my son's dog,
yeah,
who we can brag about because he can't be shown. He's right. Beautiful.
And he is beautiful, and he's monarchid. And I had this dog when I was a younger handler. I groomed a lot of dogs back then for clients, and she brought this dog into me one time. And I told you, I can't remember his name. I want to say Reuben, but I don't know what it was. He was so beautiful that I played dog show with him on the driveway and won every best of show with him. And he had one testicle.
Yeah.
What a waste this dog was. It's now, I'm not sure. I think you're allowed to show monarchids in Australia, maybe UK. I'm not sure.
I think so too. I think we're the rare bird when it comes to that.
Yeah, sort like of. Why there's so many, I don't know if it's out of our vanity or what it is, but we've missed out on so many good dogs. Even in our breed beagles, like there are some beautiful dogs that are the height of the beagles everywhere in the world, except for here in North America. Mm-hmm. I don't know what
you're not the country of origin. Who made this rule?
Yeah, like, why are we so vain? I don't care what you said. Where you are 15 inches tall.
Not in our country, you don't. Yeah. That is interesting, isn't it? Because there's some cracker. My father's best stud dog was a dog named Mickey. His registered name was like Ray's Space Cadet. I swear to you, it was because Space Cadet was something very different back then. But he was 15 and three quarters, and he never got shown, of course. And he was also marked kind of funny. But he was a great, real good sire. So why couldn't he be shown? I thought we were evaluating breeding stock here.
Oh, exactly.
And if you have a dog that's too big and you're a judge, you don't use him. But if he's 15 and a quarter or 15, that's the difference between winning a national or not. A quarter inch.
Exactly. And again, I go back to the country of origin. Like, there's a dog sitting in Missouri right now with a good friend of ours. Mm. It is a stunning dog that could just eat it up. But he's half an inch too tall.
Yep.
And I don't know. Like, what a waste. What a waste.
He's not only one of the best ones I've ever seen. His pedigree is royal gold. I mean, you can't get a better pedigree. So I just don't. It's an absolute waste. And what are they going to do? Send him to England just to win? He's the same dog here as he is there.
Yep.
He could have, you know, our friend could have sent him over and tore it up over there.
Oh, there was many people that wanted him. You know, I know Gavin is always talking to me about certain meat. I remember Andrew coming over one time and we were sitting at the National, him and I, because he had just written that Beagle book. And we were watching sweepstakes, and this beautiful dog went second in the class. And he asked me, do you think that dog's going to measure out? I said, I sure do. I think he went over to inquire if he could take it home.
So yeah, it's really an interesting dilemma, right? Are they too big in England? But I don't know. They're bigger than ours in some cases.
And who's to say what's too big? It's their country. It's their breed.
Exactly. And by the way, it's not out of control over there. You don't see 20-inch beagles in the ring. You might see some 15 and a half and 16s. You don't see a lot of, you don't see any 17s and 18s. You don't need a DQ to keep it reasonable, especially if judges are aware and go, that's just too darn big. But I do that in Irish setters or any other breed.
Exactly.
If they're too big, I don't use them anyway. Do I want them in the ring? Yes, because they should be seen. And they maybe should go reserve. They should be seen. But if you don't let them in the ring, how are you going to find out? We're not evaluating breeding stock anymore. Only a few of us are. Everybody else in the ring, it's a dog show now.
Canine figure skating.
It is. But if you wanted to find a dog to breed to, how are you going to find it if it's in somebody's house in Missouri? You know, you should be in the ring, win, lose, or draw. I don't know.
And how many people that... are going for that breed in this country should see that dog.
Yes.
And they'll never see it unless our friend invites them over for dinner.
It's true. Yes. And then you'll see him on the couch only.
Oh, look at that dog.
He's living a great life. And that was a breeding that was destined to be done. It was, I mean, geez, it was, that's just a shame. It's just absolute waste. Yeah, and this, and we're at beagles isn't the only breed. This,
it happens everywhere. I've seen it in poodles. I've seen it, you know, in American cockers.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes those changes are made. Remember mantle Great Danes?
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't allowed to show those, but if you had Harlequins, you had to have one in the kennel. Right. So we need one for breeding, but we can't show them.
We can't show it.
Breeding stuff. Unfortunately, now that rule's changed. But how silly are things like that, you know?
It's like Newfoundland's up here, our country of origin. You can't have brown ones or gray ones.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know you couldn't have brown. We have browns down here.
Oh, yeah, brown ones that are just spectacular.
There they are. And by the way, I can say down here now, because I'm home in Kalamazoo for the week, and I am farther south than you are for a change. Usually I'm up in the North Pole at our RV spot. But
do you remember Goran Bodegaard?
No.
The Judge Goran, he's a Saytown judge. He was from Sweden. He passed away a couple years ago. He was a great man. He was a good dog, Judge Goran Bodegaard. I was shown this beautiful cream Frenchie bitch at the big our national show in Toronto years ago. And he was on the panel, but he was just watching. And I ended up with this cream bitch ended up winning the group under Michelle Billings, I believe. And she just loved her. And afterwards he said, "Bring her over here, William." And I took her over and he looked at her. "She's just beautiful. Don't ever show her to me because it's they're disqualifiable in his country, that color." He said, "But she is so beautiful that he was glad that he saw her." You know,
interesting. Wow, that's interesting.
This bitch went best in show when she was 7 months old under Dick Mean, who was French bulldog man up here. You know? Yeah. But Goran fell in love with her, but he said, "Don't ever bring her to me. I couldn't put her up." You know.
Hey, you remember Millet Feigenbaum?
Oh yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah, Millet. He had that really nice dog, that whatever dog. If that dog had a handler and a backer.
Oh my God, that was a beautiful dog. And he was a good dog person. Yeah. He
was a hell of a guy. And he could dance, he could do everything.
Oh, and I think he actually co-wrote one of the songs the Eagles did too.
I think he did. And the Bible. He wrote the Bible too. I think. All right, folks. I know you think we lost our mind. We were talking earlier about how people make believe they know people. We made up Millet Feigenbaum. He doesn't exist.
But I just I didn't want to appear like I didn't know. So yeah, I know him.
Yeah, of course I know him. Right.
We used to get
all the time in dogs. You remember Bob? Oh yeah, I remember Bob. He's a good dog. Yeah, I wanted to be an Indian grad, so I'll make believe I know who he was. Yeah.
Does that happen? And you can always tell when that happens because you'll say, "Oh, you remember Wayne Kavanaugh?" They're like, "Oh yeah." And you know they don't know. It's hilarious. And especially they start making up stories about them.
That is funny. Did you know he read giraffes on the side? Really? Yeah. You know, I think I did know that. I think I read something about that. Yeah. That is funny. Millet Feigenbaum. Well, there you have it. There isn't a Millet Feigenbaum. But there is a Steve.
There might be, but
there might be.
We don't know him.
Yeah. There is a Steve Pressfield, and he's written a book that our English student here, young William, has read and has a book report.
And it's a book. Well, actually, I wrote an article about it. It'll be in Chronicle at some point. But it was recommended by my son James, who is in himself is an inspiration at times. You know, but I'll tell you, this is a must read for anybody. It's about he calls it resistance. I call it
The title of the book and the author again is
The War of Art, Stephen Pressfield.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about to break through the blocks and win your inner creative battles. Mm. So he calls it resistance. I call it laziness. But it tells you, it breaks it down for you and how what you could have been if you didn't fall into this world of resistance. And it's a must read for everybody. I really think they should read it. And I talk about it more in the article in Chronicle, but there's a section in it that I touch on in the article about turning pro. Now, Stephen Pressfield is a writer. He wrote The Legend of Beggar Vance and some other things and some screenplays. But he took a long time before he broke through, and a lot of it was due to resistance. It's his story about resistance, how resistance held him back because he would convince himself that it wasn't a good enough story. It wasn't this, it wasn't that. And he realized it was resistance that was telling him this. And just the way in this book, he turns resistance into a disease. And it really is, when you think about it, it's laziness stops a lot of us from doing things that we should be doing and making impacts in areas where we could have made impacts, but we were afraid to. That's what it comes down to. You're afraid to do it because you're afraid it would fail.
I was just going to ask you that. Is part of that because we're afraid to succeed at that?
Yeah, and I've read it probably four times now. I have it on audio in my car. I drove to Dayton yesterday to look at Millen's dogs. And I listened to it off and on just because it really does make a lot of sense. So
yeah, it just sounds, I can't wait to read it. I mean,
I hope you do. And I have it right here in front of me, and I have it open to certain pages whenever I want to check on something. So I've always tried to, I've written 20 short stories that are half done. mm-hmm. And so Stephen, if you're out there listening, you're probably a listener, Stephen. And I really thank you for your book, because I want to finish these stories now. So
I had it when I worked at the AKC, I had a bright young woman who worked for us in the Gazette. And I really, really, I thought she had great potential and a great mind. And one day we were talking about life in general and what she should do with her career. And I said to her, I think your problem is, and it was a hard thing to say. I said, your problem is you're afraid to succeed. You're afraid of failure.
Yep.
And she was irate, didn't talk to me for months. And then finally he came to me and said, can you help me with a resume? And I said, I'd be glad to, because you're way smarter than where you are right now. And she's done great things in the world. Sometimes and I know I do it myself. I can do that. I can. And once in a while I get the courage to go learn how to build a guitar, for example, or whatever it might be. And I'll agree with that creativity and move forward. But other times it's hard, you're like, I don't know.
Hard to push through. And he talks about certain things that make so much sense. You'll sit down here in front of your laptop and all of a sudden you'll think, I should go walk Clark, or I should go. And you're always making excuses not to sit down. And he makes it very businessman-like. He does all his things, walks his dogs, does everything beforehand. He starts work at 10 o'clock. He closes the door in his head and he sits there and does his work for 4 hours, he says. And then he says, it's all about doing the work. And it's in the article I wrote, I hope it makes sense. I used it. Something happened to me at a dog show that made me think about doing the work. And I expounded, because then I probably wouldn't have thought about that whole scenario of the dog show if I hadn't just read Stephen Pressfield's book. And I wouldn't have read Stephen's book if my son Jamie hadn't told me to read it. So,
by the way, Jamie was on that trip to Ireland with us, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And we were talking about that story when, remember that, he called him Crazy Dublin Man. Do you remember when the guy ran through and I guess he bumped into Mark, and I think Jamie had a rugby ball or something with him. I can't remember. And he tried to take that from James.
that was quite a day, an hour.
He still talks about Crazy Dublin Man.
Yeah, that was funny. I had some good times over there. But, and Jamie's a creative guy. And, pushing through to do these things it's certainly true in dogs, right? And a lot of us, we have a good friend who has some lovely dogs. This person is particularly critical of their dogs and is afraid to show them or even send us pictures because we might not like them because they're not perfect.
Right.
So you've got to push through that, and you've got to. Now there are other people who just show. I don't want to call them junk. They're good dogs, just not show dogs. Dogs that shouldn't be show dogs, and they show them anyway. And there's those that just keep them home because they're not perfect. You know, it's that balance of when to get, when to believe your eye, when to believe your creativity. We just finished building this house. It's not unpacked yet. We moved in last week, and my office doesn't have a window on purpose. And the walls are a dark color. Sound channeled. I have to have complete, I can't have distractions. I can't listen to music while I'm trimming a dog either. I mean, I have to have 100% focus.
The opposite way, I have to have headphones on, listen to music while I'm doing things.
Isn't that interesting, right? We're also, we approach these things so differently.
My father was a writer. He wrote quite a few novels, and his whole system was, he had this office in the basement. This was back in the, he was most active in the 70s. And I went down there one time and he was writing away, and he explained to me about, he had this fake fireplace. In those days, we have good fake fireplaces now. Yeah. You know, those days, it was just a thing to spin.
Yes. I remember
that. Some of them had paper on top, so it looked like had to have that running when he was writing.
Isn't that funny? Because you know what? I've got one of those. And I haven't plugged it in yet. I haven't unpacked it yet. It doesn't have the wavy foil. That's a real nice one. I got it because in the last house, the basement is where I had my office. It could be chilly down there in the winter. And I started having that on, and it became like a security blanket for me. And that's interesting.
That had to be on. Even if he wasn't on it, he just have that spinning motion, he would write, you know.
Well, you know, I think that the sport is one where there's a lot of creative people. You'll find it's not a surprise to find that someone who has dogs and is good at it is also an artist, a painter.
Right. Well, there's many out there.
Yeah, a dancer, whatever it might be. I mean, Frank Sabella is so creative, and what a great dancer. So you know, there's so many people that have that eye, and I almost wonder. I'd like to think that if you don't have a creative part of you, that you won't have, if you don't have the eye of an artist or an eye for balance, you'll never be a good judge. And I think we have that issue where some people just don't have that creativity to even break through. And maybe they should be doing accounting instead of, and I'm not, we need accountants, goodness, but instead of judging dog shows, I don't know, but there is, and it's hard, you know, and judging too, there's that creative breakthrough process, that resistance. You see a dog that you really like yourself, and are you selfish enough to say, I don't care if people think, I'm going to do that.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, or are you going to just do what's normal and not take a chance? It's risk-taking. It's curiosity. It's breaking through. I know watching our granddaughter grow up, she's extremely curious, wants to learn about everything. And that's a thing that kids go through. We get them into school, and the first thing we say is, no, all trees are brown. All leaves are green. There's no, you know, we stifle their creativity.
Sorry.
By the way, I mentioned that example because I got in trouble in first grade for painting a tree with gray bark. I see trees as gray. Do you see any brown trees?
Not really, no.
The bark's gray. It's grayish brown.
Yeah,
but to me, gray was closer than brown, and no, you got to change it, make it brown. So we stopped that creativity. Now, there are, obviously, I think we're getting better at that in education, but still, you have to find that creativity within you and then break through and not be afraid to use it. And our sport, it comes to trimming and presentation, it comes to breeding decisions, it comes to judging decisions. All of that is part of that element.
There's no question. And resistance comes to play in our sport, just to the point where you're sitting there at night thinking, oh, I should trim that Bouvier. Oh, no, I'll watch. Let's make a deal instead. that's the difference between, he talks about turning pro. He doesn't call, and he doesn't, when he say turning pro, he doesn't mean the pro as in
getting paid.
He talks about that, but he also says pro in how you look at things, how you are all in, where amateurs will do it. They're half in for fun, where the pro does it because they love it and that's their life. And he tries to express it. It's not all about making the money being a pro. It's how you approach things.
That's 100% correct. My mentor in poetry in undergraduate school who won the Pulitzer Prize, Stephen Dunn, was a great influence in my life and a great friend and a great mentor. But he would say all the time, if you're going to be a poet, you've got to be one 100% of the time, because you got to notice everything in the world as a poem. Look constantly. Photographer, same thing. You've got to look. I know Gay's always looking, even Gay Glassbrook. She's not only looking for a picture in her head, she's looking, she's framing every shot.
I think she sees pictures. I think Gay sees the world as pictures and stops it. And I'll let you stop that one. You know?
And that's what you've got to devote your eye to and your brain to. Not saying you can't have fun doing it, hobby at all. That's, I think, encouraging that is a good thing. But yeah, you've got to, in the case of trimming your bouvier, you've got the talent. You know you have the artistic ability to do it. And then you've got the procrastination detail, right? Where maybe I'll just go do something I know I can't mess up today.
Well, we're so all into our culture is so instant gratification that trimming the bouvier really isn't instant gratification. So you'd rather go do something that you can get done now and look, oh, look, I did that. I watched that episode of Let's Make a Deal. It's over.
Right. Well, if you want to make a list every day, you've got A items, B items, and C items, right? A are the big ones you've got to get done. B are, maybe you should get them done and they're not that difficult to do. C is real easy. Like I got to push the dishwasher button.
Right.
And we end up doing C items all day and never getting to the A items. And that's a discipline thing that's hard to do.
It's really hard. And it's hard to break through. I'm so glad Jamie suggested this book for me because I really enjoyed my time with the book. But I'm done it now, so I can go on.
There you go. Breakthrough, Will. Go breakthrough.
I made the breakthrough.
Let's make a deal.
Does Let's Make a Deal even still exist? I don't even know.
Yes. It probably. Oh, I don't know. I don't have any idea. I'm glad I don't have any idea. We had the guys from Best Buy come out and hang the TVs in the new house yesterday and get that all dialed in. So we woke up this morning and Cheryl said, well, can we watch the morning news? And I said, no, we haven't actually.
No.
We don't have any TV service. We just have the TVs.
That's for hockey games.
So I don't know if it's Let's Make. We just don't watch TV. We watch the Today Show and I watch hockey. And I do like my home and garden stuff, HGTV, the building shows, particularly design shows. But that's something that I do in the winter. In the summer, I'm not watching any of that. There's outside stuff to do. So I don't know what the TV schedules are. But I do have to eventually get something to watch. Right now we have... it's a frame TV, Samsung frame. Highly recommend them. They look like a painting on your wall. They're flush to the wall. They have a frame, thus the name. And usually you're looking at a Van Gogh or a Monet or anything you want to download on there. But when you walk by it, it can activate into a TV if you'd like to set it up that way.
It can activate into a TV.
Yeah, no one knows we have a TV over our fireplace. It looks like a painting. But if you want to, you can hit the button and it's a TV.
I miss the days of banging the top of the 13-inch black and white TV and putting tinfoil on the rabbit ears.
Yeah, wasn't that fun? And then I know in our house, the kids were the remote controls, right? Wayne, come in, get in the house. What do you want, Dad? Channel 3?
Okay. Try to tune in channel 3 for me. And you used to have to tune it in, too. You had to, like, play with the dial. Yeah. It came in perfectly,
Hey, we're revealing our age here, young William. Yeah. Middle-aged William, I might have to start calling you.
Oh, no.
What else is new in dogs? Hey, how about I had a great email from a friend of mine who I tremendously respect. She breeds what you would call a low-entry breed. She really was essential in bringing to this country. And she said, she has litter puppies. She said, I think I'm done this breeding. And I said, too difficult, too much time? She said, no. I just worry too much about who's going to get my dogs and finding good homes. And how much do you want to get down that road? And can you go down that road?
Yeah.
Can you really find out what the soul and heart of these people are that you're selling this dog to?
It's difficult. It's difficult. Yeah. I've delivered dogs to people and you drive away thinking, oh my God, there's a Criminal Minds episode waiting to happen, and they've got two dogs now. So it's a tough call. And that's my job. My other job is I was transporting dogs, and you go where you're sent, you know, but.
Yeah. You wonder how much research they've done and if it's worth it, because quite frankly, you know, you can pull up to this beautiful house. And that is a plus if it's clean. I mean, there's definitely benefits to that. But we have these contracts and these papers, and we think that's our wall of protection. And guess what? People don't care about papers anymore.
No.
They have no problem breeding that dog without your permission. You don't know. And they can breed it to cock-a-doodle-doos for all you know, and you'd never know. If they want to register the next litter as Goldens, they just fill out the papers and breed to a Golden and register them properly.
Yeah.
But in between, you want to rebreed them to a schnitzy-doodle, off you go. Nothing you can do about it. So it's a tremendous amount of trust in letting go, and that's hard for some. And this particular person has a hard time doing it, and I understand it.
And you can do all the research you want sometimes. The way the internet is now, they can be portrayed any way they want to be portrayed. Unless you go and visit these people,
It's tough. Yet every day, thousands of dogs are bought out of pet shops. Just walk in, flash a credit card, and off you go. I bet most of those get great homes, but I'll bet there's plenty that don't. So
exactly.
I don't know. The good news is that the shelters are full of, I shouldn't say the good news is the shelters are full of dogs. The bad news is that the shelters still have plenty of dogs. The good news is that you don't see a lot of purebred dogs there anymore. The rescues have done a great job. And I think people do a pretty good job of placing them. You just don't see them in shelters. You see a lot, mostly crossbred dogs or pit bull variety dogs. And I guess that's something good that breeders are doing. On the other hand, are we getting them out there enough? The great conundrum of 2022. That and our local Big Bees is out of bagel bags, Will. They're out of them. There are no bagel bags to put your bagel in.
Oh, my.
It's a shortage that I'm concerned about. And Jimmy John's no longer has thinny chips. There's a great shortage of those, too.
What is happening in Kalamazoo?
This is a problem here. We got
the apocalypse has hit Kalamazoo.
We've got a problem. But yeah. We've got plenty of good dog people here, that's for sure. We really are an interesting... I don't know how it happened, but Kalamazoo is surrounded by great breeders and great kennels and
show winners. Just going to Kalamazoo and visiting you and doing the dog show, and it's just a great area.
So. And I was telling you, Will, earlier before we started recording, that Brody and his wife Margaret were up with their two pointers, and I was able to take them to this dog park they've been before. Now, when you say dog park, every listener's ears just went up like a Doberman Pinscher. I was like, "What dog park?" This place is unbelievable. It's hard to even describe it because it's about 20 acres. It's a rolling meadow of gloriousness. It looks like a golf course. And it's 6-foot chain link buried. It's surrounded by hardwoods. So the trees come right up. It probably was a cornfield or something back in its day because it's so beautifully manicured, but surrounded by trees. So it must have been cleared for some reason other than the dog park. You wouldn't be able to afford to do it. There's a pub with a balcony with a deck that overlooks the so you can go have a beer. There's a training center. These are separate gorgeous buildings. They look all craftsman style. There's a bathing and self-grooming center. It's got every tool in the world and plate glass windows. So while the dogs are being bathed, they can look out and watch these other dogs play. There's a pond with little, what do you call those things that don't have roofs? It's a shade cover thing. Anyway, they have them and you sit under them and you only get striped tans. What am I talking about?
Gazebos? I don't know.
No, well, they have those too, but these are like porch covers, but they don't have a solid roof. We all know the word for this, except me at the moment. Anyway, there's those too, Will, and there's sand around the pond. So it's kind of like a beach in the middle of the thing. And, they have docks that are regulation for dock jumping. You can train there. And the dogs can go for a swim and cool off. There's tennis balls randomly tossed around the place. But it's so big that there's never any stress between dogs, right? They're off in their own corner. It rolls so much, you can't even see them over the hills. Well, these pointers took off, and it was so much fun to watch. Oh, man, it was glorious. But to have a resource like that right here, in addition to everything else, it is dog mecca. Yeah. I've never seen a place like this. Oh, and by the way, you just can't pop in. You have to be a member of this club, and it's, I don't know, $400 a year or something. So it's not just people dropping in. They're all temperament tested before they come in, and you know, all that stuff. So special place. We need more of those in this world. Yes. Unfortunately, dude, because there's no place to run dogs anymore. So you've got to join a park to do that, right? Right. A club to do that. Club dog. All right, young William, what do you got on the schedule today besides Wheel of Fortune or Make a Deal?
Right? Yeah, let's make a deal. I don't want to miss that. I have a dog show tomorrow, so I have a few things I have to do around here beforehand. Then I've got to get pushed through resistance and get that Irish Setter trimmed.
That's right. Oh, you're showing tomorrow, not judging.
Yeah, showing tomorrow. Yeah.
What's more fun for you? What do you wake up in the morning and say, I'm so glad I'm going to either show or judge?
It bounces back and forth. Okay. If I'm on a panel, I'm looking forward to judging the next day. I really am. And then if I'm going to a show with my dogs and I think, oh, look who's judging. I can't wait to show to them that day. And sometimes just, I can't wait to see everybody. I can't wait to hang out with everybody.
A different level of anticipation, but at the end of the day, you nailed it. It's about the people in the sport, isn't it? I mean, that's why, there's a lot of older judges that tell me, hey, this is my social life. I don't play poker at the clubhouse. You know, I want to be with my dog friends. I've known them forever.
Well, exactly. And I love seeing them. And I can't tell you how excited our whole kennel club was that Barbie was coming up to the Toronto show.
Yeah.
Because everybody loved seeing her.
Hey, by the way, I loved your interview with Amy Rodriguez.
Oh, good.
That was terrific. And boy, she's bright and got it together. I remember when I first met her. I doubt she doesn't. Dorothy McDonald introduced me to her when she was a young teenager in California. She wanted me to see this Brittany, this kid had. And immediately I saw this kid had great hands. And so we have so many of those people that we've known forever and don't even remember when we met in the sport. You know, it's just, I don't remember when I met Doug Belter.
It's not even important these days. You just become part of your...
Yeah, it's part of the family, part of the crew. You know, and,
I remember when I met Doug Belter. Toronto, 1986.
There's a showdown in the middle of the ring.
Showing this Irish Setter. He was shot.
We took out our brushes and dueled with our brushes. Anytime I know one thing around here, if I need something, if something horrible happens, that's a number I've got.
For sure. He was always like that. You know?
Yeah. But, you know, we do have so many people in the sport we've grown up with that make it special. And we need to focus on that. Break through your creativity. Be careful buying dogs abroad. And appreciate the friendships you have in the sport. The Barbara Aldermans are far and few between. Or is it few and far between? Both the same thing.
Far and few between. It could go either way, I suppose.
Yeah. Count. Think about the good things we have in this sport. Creative people and the good friendships, and your life will be happier. That's all I got, young William. Take us out.
All right, guys. Safe trip out there to whatever dog show you're going to. Good luck to everybody, and we'll see you down the road.
Party on, Bert.
No way.
Better be paying attention, Doc.
Give me grace. Bury my sins.
So Ernie can use this in the blooper reel.
That's right.
We love you, Ernie.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quit taking yourself damn seriously.
Watch the move under my feet. Stranger things. To see the world and take the throne. Don't hold back.
Thanks, Ernie. Oh, we didn't mention hockey. Won't hold back. Isn't that unbelievable, though? Put that in, Doc.
And I want to see it on a blooper anywhere.